Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 36 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. Oh boy, have we got a hot topic for you. Open relationships wipe the shock off your face. Before we dive into that, just know that this episode of HER is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. Hey, I read these things, you know, and they're really, really important to us. So come on down afterwards and make sure to rate it and review it. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about HER.
Now, on this episode, we're going to be talking about polyamory. What the heck is that? And open relationships. And we're very excited to have with us literally the national expert on this, Dr. Elizabeth Sheff, or Dr. Eli, as she's well known. Now, she is the author of When Someone You Love Is Polyamorous. And her background is amazing. She is the foremost academic expert on polyamory in the United States and the worldwide expert on polyamorous families with children. Her first book, The Polyamorous Next Door, which was published in 2014, details her 15-year study of poly families with kids and was just reprinted in paperback. And her second book, Stories from the Polycule, which was published in 2015, is an edited anthology of writings by poly folks, of course. When Someone You Love Is Polyamorous, which is the book I mentioned earlier, published in 2016, this is Sheff's shortest book that guides family members and significant others who are trying to understand what the heck is all this about. So without further ado, Dr. Eli, welcome on board with the HER podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, what a hot topic. I mean, my fingers have third degree burns just by picking up the information and the materials I had on this. Would you do me a favor? Tell us, what got you involved as an academician looking at this entire topic?
When I was a young person, probably 22 maybe, I fell in love with a man who on our first date told me he never wanted to be monogamous and never wanted to get married. And initially, I thought, well, whatever, freak, I don't care. You know, no big deal, because I wasn't planning to stay with him. But then when I realized I was in love with him, it turned out that it actually was a really big deal to me. I was completely freaked out by it. And as an intellectual, I intellectualize things that frighten me. So I figured if I could just study it, figure it out, maybe it would make it not quite so frightening.
Huh. Well, and so then you started looking at it, and I guess you sort of, as it were, became enamored with the entire subject, now having written all of these books and back and forth. So can you help us understand, first, why don't you define polyamory? Because I think a lot of people are probably out there in HER podcast land saying, well, is that the same thing as swinging? Polygamy? I mean, what is this?
Right. Polyamory is a form of consensual non-monogamy that emphasizes emotional intimacy and long-term multiple partner relationships. Now, that's in the ideal. Some poly relationships are not long-term, and some of them are not that emotionally intimate. But the rules of polyamory that people often negotiate with each other tend to allow emotional intimacy in a way that, for instance, many people who swing, who do swinging, often have rules against becoming intimate, emotionally intimate with other people outside of the established couple or the relationship. Polyamory also allows people of all genders multiple partners. So it's very different from polygyny, which is one man with multiple wives. Polyamory allows women, trans folks, everybody, multiple partners. Whoever wants them can have them.
Wow. I'm just absorbing all of this. You know, I've done my little homework here. After having read the marvelous article in the New York Times recently where, you know, they really summarize some of the highlights of what this this whole sector of polyamory is about. So there are thoughts that they brought up, which I thought were really quite interesting. They said, open relationships aren't for everyone, neither is monogamy. So what does that mean?
Very true. Well, some people, some of my respondents, talk about polyamory being a sexual orientation for them, meaning they talk about being wired that way or that it's a deep part of their personality, not something that is a passing whim or something they could turn off necessarily. But it's not that case for everyone. Some people choose polyamory as a lifestyle, rather than being a sexual orientation for them. The difference tends to be the lifestyle folks can also feel comfortable in monogamous relationships, whereas the people who are polyamorous by sexual orientation, it's like a lesbian trying to be with a man. It just doesn't fit for them. So one of my respondents described trying to be monogamous like wearing shoes that were three sizes too small, that she could squash her feet into them for a little while, but she certainly couldn't wear it for very long and she couldn't walk very far in it. So monogamy was just not a dealable way for her to live her life.
Interesting. You know, I bet the women out there in her podcast land are saying to themselves, ew, jealousy. And one of the thoughts is, you know, jealousy is present but not unique. Help us understand where that fits because, you know, we live in a society where a lot of the ground rule was always about just one person for one person, you know, as it were. So now what happens? Where does it fit in? How do you wrap your head around jealousy?
Jealousy is certainly an issue in polyamorous relationships, absolutely. But it's also an issue in monogamous relationships. Being monogamous does not insulate you from being jealous. But being polyamorous kind of makes you roll around in it, really kind of
right,
takes the jealousy
right.
and rubs it all over you.
a like, lot of people hello?
Who, yes, it can be pretty hardcore. A lot of people in polyamorous relationships talk about learning to manage situations that make them jealous. So learning to do self-care and deal with their jealousy. Sometimes they talk about arranging things in a way that doesn't encourage jealousy. Like sometimes people will have rules about fine, have sex with other people, but not in our bed, for instance.
Oh, I see.
Or people will say that it's important for you to have a date night with your long-term partner. If you start polyamory and you're already with someone and then you start dating someone new, it can be incredibly easy to get really distracted with the shiny, new, exciting person. The polyamorists call that new relationship energy. that, you know, once you start hanging out with somebody new, it's like you haven't seen the downside of them yet. Suddenly, talking about the school board meeting was never so fascinating. Who knew PTA could be so fascinating? You know? But really, it's not that PTA is that fascinating. It's that you're all excited about this person, this new person. And it's fine to be excited about the new person. Just don't forget to really take care of your longer-term relationships, too. Make sure you have date night. Make sure that you express love for that person. Bring them flowers. You know, wear slinky lingerie for them as well. Don't pour all of your excitement into your new relationship, or your longer-standing relationship will feel neglected. And that's no fun.
Huh. So, how, you know, classically, how long do these relationships last? In other words, you know, is there a difference between that and monogamous, or how does that work?
You know, it's kind of hard to say because there hasn't been enough research tracking, comparing, but in my studies, I have found that some of them last a really long time. And there appears to be, for some of the relationships that I've studied, kind of a 15-year sunset issue, that now I'm on my fourth wave of data collection. So 20 years of doing
wow.
this. And between the last time I checked in with people and this time, a whole bunch of people got divorced. So they made it 15 years, but between the 15 and 20-year mark, a whole bunch of people got divorced. And actually, that's not that unusual for monogamous families either. There's another whole group that make it into the 40 and 50 years together. So there's no kind of one recipe for how long polyfamilies stay together, except that the larger the group is, the more likely it is to have turnover in between me talking to them. So, for instance, if there is a group of five people together, the next time I come talk to them, three or four, you know, and I often talk to people in five-year increments. So the next time I check in with them, three or four of them might be the same, but the relationship might have shrunk, so it might just be the three or four, or they might have added new people, different people. But the larger the relationship is, meaning the more people involved, the more likely it is to have some turnover in between me checking in with them.
Interesting. Very interesting. Do you think the younger people, millennials and others, are more embracing of this?
Absolutely. I think younger people assume that relationships must be negotiated. They're not all assuming that they must be polyamorous, but very few of them are assuming that monogamy is the only way to be, or that if they hook up with someone, that means they're really together. Hooking up is just hooking up. If you want to say, okay, now we've hooked up and now we're really together and it's just the two of us, that takes an explicit conversation now in a way that it didn't so much 40 years ago. So monogamy cannot be assumed. It must be negotiated for young people. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're all identifying as polyamorous per se. Some of them identify as relationship anarchists. Some of them identify as monogamish. Others as just dating, but there's a very strong thread that has replaced monogamy as the only default, the sole legitimate form of relationship, with negotiation. So not that no one is monogamous anymore, that's still a very popular version of relationship, but just that you can't assume monogamy, which is a significant shift.
Wow. I mean, this really is huge when you think about
it. It is.
Because
absolutely,
we're talking about looking, into the future. And, and saying to ourselves, what really is the trend here? Because this impacts upon the next topic, which you've talked about so beautifully, in your research, which is families. Now,
right,
what happens when somebody gets pregnant and now you've got this, a little more complex situation going?
Absolutely.
How do you work that out? I know you do a lot of work, legal consulting, with families that have this kind of an arrangement.
Right.
So this must be kind of prickly pear time, like, whoops, how do you do this? So why don't you walk us through that a little bit?
Well, for one thing, most poly people are very aware of, excuse me, got a frog in my throat there. Most poly people are very aware of safer sex and trying not
right
to infect or get any sexually transmitted infections, which means the kind of being very careful about pregnancy is often a byproduct of that if you are not having any fluid transfer willy-nilly, then you're also not accidentally getting pregnant, usually. So most poly families plan and intentionally bear their children rather than it happening accidentally. It does occasionally happen accidentally, but not as often as with families that aren't using barriers as much. So the pregnancies tend to be more intentional. They also pretty much always know who the biological parents are. Those may not be the primary parents who take care of the kids every day. If they're in a stable poly family, the biological parent isn't necessarily the full-time caregiver, but the kids and the adults know who that biological parent is. When they face custody issues in court, those usually come from either an ex-spouse, the other parent of the child, and they got divorced, and that parent then finds out that their ex-spouse is in a polyamorous relationship and it's like, nope, I don't want my kid around that. So the ex-spouse is a popular one, or a grandparent whose child is polyamorous and they have a grandchild living in the family sometimes gets very upset about that and will try to take the kids to keep them away from the polyamorous family.
What legal rights do they have?
It really depends on where they are, where the family lives and where they're in court. Polyamory is not illegal per se. Multiple partner marriage or bigamy is illegal, and most poly people don't hold themselves out as married to multiple people. They may be married to one. So they're not often prosecuted for that, but much like gays and lesbians used to pretty much always lose their kids if they were challenged in court, poly folks still lose their kids pretty frequently, almost all the time, if they're challenged in court, especially if it's in a conservative part of the country. The courts use the standard of what's in the best interest of the child to make custody determinations. And if the judge has moral objections to polyamory, feels like, especially if they have a strong religious grounding in Christianity, for instance, that says one man and one woman, that's the only correct way to have a family, then even if the family is in great shape and treating the kids great and they're happy together and they're, not doing anything wrong except loving multiple people. If the judge thinks that's immoral, then they will lose that child no matter how much they demonstrate that they love the child and take good care of the child. If the judge is just thinking, oh, this is weird, I've never heard of this, what is this, and then is open to finding out what it's really about, in those cases, poly families often keep their children. But if it's a moral issue, there's just no way around that moral objection to non-monogamy except saying it's consensual. And for some people, that just makes it worse, that they would be more comfortable if people were cheating instead of consensually non-monogamous.
I see. How fascinating. So, you know, I want everyone out there in Her podcast land to know we're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Sheff, kindly known as Dr. Eli, who is the author of When Someone You Love Is Polyamorous. And her website is Elizabeth Sheff, and that's spelled SHEFF.com. And she has a Psychology Today blog, The Polyamorous Next Door, which I highly recommend you read as well, because this keeps you up to date with a lot of her wonderful research. I just find this to be very timely, given the millennials, given the changes in, as it were, dating and mating patterns and behaviors currently. And really what this is going to mean as you go forward, I'm kind of smiling somewhat because I'm thinking of the hippie days, right? Back in the 60s. And I'm wondering, is that kind of the same thing? Because it sort of feels like that. What do you think?
Some of the people having polyamorous relationships right now are the free love hippies from the 60s and 70s who've been doing it for the last 40 years, 50 years. I, in fact, just on this round of data collection, I interviewed Oberon Zell Ravenheart, who's one of the founders of the polyamory movement. And he was in a polyamorous relationship with Morning Glory Zell Ravenheart for 60 years before she passed away just recently, about 2 years ago. So Certainly some of those old hippies are still at it. Because I study mostly people with children right now, most of the people I talk to are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. But that doesn't mean that younger people aren't doing it. I just think that they're so busy leading their lives that they don't have time to talk to me about it. And because poly folks, at least the ones who participate in research, tend to be pretty highly educated, they, in that entire generation, educated people tend to put off childbearing into their 30s. They're not having kids at 22 because they're in college. So the polyamorists who are in their 20s, their teens and 20s right now, are probably not going to volunteer for the study quite yet because they often don't have children.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing too. I'm just thinking to myself, you know, many people have just enough trouble trying to keep up with one person in their life, you know, keeping up with more than one. Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel sort of like, you know, Sex and the City with Jessica, you know, Parker, you know, sitting there trying to manage, you know, four boyfriends at one time. And after a while, you just rip your hair out going, you know, because each person has their own particular needs and back and forth. And, you know, it can be quite interesting. So clearly these people must have very strong executive function to be able to strategize, plan, organize. And what I'm also hearing is that communication has to be absolutely where it's at. Oh, my gosh. I mean, you have got to be talking to one another and coordinating all of this and collaborating, because otherwise I don't see this working out at all, one way or the other. So, you know, what I'm getting out of talking to you, you know, one of the wonderful things, because you're so smart about this and you've been studying this for so many years, is that, one, this is a trend we need to pay a boatload of attention to, because this is really impacting, especially on the younger generations. What will this mean in terms of the constellation and constitution of families going forward? What kind of options are out there? What does the spectrum of relationship now look like? The tremendous amount of diversity out there. And how much of this, you know, must we really be able to understand now to be able to fully respect and honor what's going on, and keep conversations and communication about this going? I find this to be a very fascinating movement, to say the least. I'm going to be keeping my eye out for more of your wonderful work and your books and your blog to stay up on this, because I really think that this is very, as it were, sticky. It's going to stick. It's sustainable. And I think this whole issue of polyamory and open relationships as it relates to this is pretty much here to stay, and it's probably going to be going through a lot of different iterations, you know, going forward. So one thing to share with our Her podcast audience that you just want to leave them with, a little bit of wisdom there, Dr. Eli.
That a lot of people are disillusioned with monogamy. It worked great for us when we were only living into our 30s or 40s. But now we can expect to live into our 80s and 90s. And monogamy is just not that feasible when you have access to so, so many people in real life and online. Monogamy worked great for short lifespan people who maybe met 300 people in their entire lives, half of whom they were related to. Now, we live so much longer, monogamy is not that feasible. So serial monogamy still works for quite a few people, and I don't think it's going away. But a lot of people look at their parents' relationships and see cheating, destroying the family, and they think monogamy doesn't work, cheating doesn't work, let's try something else.
And you have described this beautifully. Well, you've described this beautifully. So I'm thank you so much for your wisdom.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, on this incredibly provocative topic. Again, everyone, we've been talking to Dr. Elizabeth Sheff. Please make sure to hop on over and buy her book, When Someone You Love is Polyamorous. Thank you, Dr. Sheff. Hey, everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. And that's because we want to attract a whole lot more people just like you. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. And please leave a review there, too. I told you, I live for those reviews. Yes, I read every flipping one of them. I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakeMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.